Welcome to Slightly Offsides, your perfect game plan for all things college and professional football. Hosted by Dre and Mike.
Welcome back to Slightly Offsides, presented by Better Edge. Play the game without getting played. I've got Greg with me here tonight. Dre is not able to make it. He's got very important professional opportunity, we'll put it at that, that he has to take care of in Atlanta. So we're all rooting for you, Dre, and go kill it. But yeah, so it's going to be me and Greg tonight to unpack a week that lived up to the hype, I think is the best way to describe week 7. We had 6 top 25 matchups, and boy, oh boy, was there everything. There was drama, there was intrigue, there was Nick Saban tossing headsets. We had it all. So, Greg, kind of just like, let's unpack this and walk me through what your thoughts were on a wild week 7.
Yeah, I mean, big time matchups, you know, some of them lived up to expectations, some of them didn't, namely Penn State, Michigan. I was expecting a much closer game than that, but man, some insane games on the slate. I mean, obvious ones are Bama goes down, Clemson survives, emotional win for Utah against USC, you know, TCU beating Oklahoma State in double overtime, and the playoff picture starting to become a little bit clearer just over halfway through the season. It was a very interesting week for sure. I was watching TV noon to 7 for football, and then I had to take a little week, and then watched a little bit later as well. So, I mean, I don't regret it at all. It was, you know, some phenomenal games. And some great storylines as well that we're going to talk about some more later.
Yeah, it was a week to cancel your plans for sure. That's, I think, what most of us did. I had manufactured, Greg, I had like a jerry-rigged quad box. So I had my iPad, my phone, my laptop, and then my TV all had different games on for the night window, and I guess for the day window too. But yeah, so I mean, let's unpack this, because let's just, I guess, first get the elephant out of the room here, and let's just kind of discuss this Tennessee-Alabama game. I think it was a crazy enough game to warrant its own discussion, Greg, before we go into winners and losers, because I think this is the game. Like, if you're looking at this game, right? This game to me is like the living embodiment of everything that we love about college football. Like, you don't get this game in the NFL because you don't have a home field advantage like you do in college, in the NFL. So this was a game where, I mean, the atmosphere was absolutely electric. It actually was the 6th loudest game, I guess, recorded in the history of college football. It was like 124.6 decibels was the max recording at that game. The goalposts are still missing. I mean, it was crazy. Just words can't really describe watching that game live start to finish.
Yeah, and you know, I don't want to say I called it, but I called it. Nah, but the hostile environment there, I mean, those whatever you want to say about, you know, Tennessee fans, we knew that they were gonna come to play, you know, the 12th man advantage. Watching game day beforehand, who is it? Reese Davis said, you know, I don't condone this behavior, but you know, just looking at the future bills, if Tennessee wins, $100,000 fine from the SEC for storming the field, and I think $25,000 for replacing the goalposts. But I don't think the UT administration is too much. Hell of a game.
Nah, man. Yeah, so Greg, let's actually, I think this is going to be the first one we'll do, but since there were so many good games this week, I think maybe, you know, we typically run through winners and losers. We'll truncate that a little bit this episode, and we'll kind of break down some of these mm-hmm. big matchups, because I think there's a lot to unpack in these games, especially just from, you know, playoff perspective and, you know, pretender contender perspective. I really want to get your opinion on some of these. So yeah, let's keep diving into this Tennessee yep. game. I guess my first question for you, right, is let's look at this from each team's lens, right? So let's first look at it from Alabama's lens. You know, early on in the season, this game to me really was very similar in terms of just kind of atmosphere and vibe right from the jump as that Texas game, where Alabama kind of got out to a slow start, and you could just tell from the beginning that the atmosphere was, and this is going to be a phrase you don't really hear that often when you're talking about Bama players, but it just seemed like the atmosphere was a little too much for those guys. Like, I was reading today that Will Anderson and Nick Saban both realized in the tunnel before they came out onto the field, Greg, that their players were abnormally quiet and very anxious, very tense. I think that was definitely shown on the field, and there's just a lot of mistakes. Most mistakes in a Nick Saban coached era is wild to me. They had more penalty yards than rushing yards. So I guess my question to you, Greg, here is how much of this is legitimate panic for Alabama, and how much of this is Tennessee as a national contender?
So I guess starting with Bama, I don't buy that Bama is done. Especially with Nick Saban as their head coach. I mean, until they go 8-3 and they have a ton of transfers out of the program, you can never count Bama out. And, you know, rest of the year, we'll see. Is it going to be the same team rest of the year? You know, very talented on both sides of the ball, basically every position. They have a 5-star or a top 50 caliber player, you know, playing. But, I mean, it's really not too different than how they've been playing all year. They've, you know, penalties have been a story for the entire year. They haven't been very disciplined, getting off to slow starts. This wasn't the first game they got off to a slow start. One thing I like to point out is that they fought back, and I was watching this game. I think they were up 28-10 in the first half, and even into the second half, Tennessee was up by multiple scores, and Bama cut the lead. They cut the deficit. You know, Bryce Young had a really good game. It just seemed like this was going to be another one of those games where Tennessee, not necessarily playing bad, but it's just Bama. Bama turns on the heat, and, you know, there's nothing you can do about it once that offense gets going, and, you know, once you get those pass rushers firing at all cylinders, there's not much you can do to stop Bama coming back. It's kind of like, you know, watching the Patriots in their prime. You know, they're never really out of a ball game. Even if you get a lead in the first half, you could count on those halftime adjustments. But, man, especially when they took that fumble back, for the touchdown, I thought that was it. But I think this is both, you know, Tennessee's legit contender. Because how many teams, you go down 7 points, you know, halfway through the fourth, how many teams would have the composure? You already blew a big lead to fight back. And, I mean, some of these performances, like Jalin Hyatt, 5 touchdown catches against Bama. You know, no Cedric Tillman this game. He stepped up in a big way. He showed he was that deep threat, and he filled the void of Cedric Tillman. He was making plays all game long, and, you know, Hendon Hooker as well. So, you know, I'm buying Tennessee as a playoff contender, not saying that, you know, it's a lock by any means. They still have to play out the rest of the season. They still have to play Georgia. And, you know, if they get to that point, they're going to have to play in the SEC championship game, maybe against Bama again. But this is a very legit football team. You know, Tennessee is certainly back, and I'll be very curious to see how Bama bounces back for the rest of the year. Not just next week, but if Bama can run the table for the rest of the year, maybe play Tennessee again, fix some of their mistakes. One thing I saw Nick Saban was complaining after, you know, early this week about how he can't be as much of a dick as he used to be because of transferring and NIL money. You know, he was kind of complaining that if he's, you know, if he yells at his players, you know, his players aren't afraid of him anymore. They can just transfer and take their money. So I don't know how much of that I buy. I mean, you know, NFL coaches have to coach players that make tons of money. And I mean, some college coaches have been paying players, you know, past 10 years, pretty much all of history. But we'll see how Nick Saban responds as well, because this is a very uncharacteristic L for him.
Yeah, you brought up some really good points. And one of the things you said, Greg, and I think is very true, is we did kind of foreshadow this happening right after the Texas game. We kind of talked about some of the structural issues. And we said, like, hey, look, if Bama doesn't fix this, they're vulnerable. And those issues were exactly what reared their head in this game. Whether it was early on in the first quarter, that O-line was just a sieve. I mean, like, there was that one possession that Bama had where they were in their own 5-yard line, and it was like Tennessee just kept loading up the pressures, and Bryce Young just had no time in the pocket. And then again, we saw, you know, you mentioned Jalin Hyatt, broken defensive coverages from Bama. I mean, some of those touchdowns were wide open. And that was kind of a theme across the night, and credit to Hendon Hooker. He made a lot of tough throws. He had an absolutely amazing game. But the theme there is, look, Bama's, when they can't get pressure on the quarterback, their defensive backs and their secondary are vulnerable. And that was shown against a really good passing attack in Tennessee. And they kind of exposed that, which is, again, what we had talked about earlier on. You know, and I kind of want to say something here too, Greg, which is like, Alabama, this year's Alabama gives me very similar vibes to kind of last year's Ohio State, in the sense that, like, the defense just seems like, I don't know if it's schematics or whatever it is, or just like, I don't know what it is, but they just seem to be a half step behind, like, when they're on the field. And these are guys like Ohio State as well last year, highly talented guys. Like, this should not be occurring by any means when you look on paper who they have in that secondary. So it just kind of makes you wonder, like, what else is going on behind the scenes there, especially given, you know, just the lack of discipline. It's very uncharacteristic of a Nick Saban coach team. So yeah, just small point there. And you make an excellent point too, Greg. I mean, they're about to go up this weekend and play a Mississippi State team at home. That, I mean, obviously, yeah, they get them at home, right? But Mississippi State, no slouch. Like, they lost to Kentucky last week, but I mean, that is, again, that's a team that, like, you look at Mississippi State and you look at what Alabama is struggling with this year. Mississippi State is like a team that is built to test Bama this year, because they're gonna stretch that secondary, and if Bama can't get pressure, then, you know, if things haven't changed, they're gonna be having issues again this week. And then you get Ole Miss as well. So it's not a friendly schedule, not only in the sense of strength of schedule, but also the quality and, I guess, kind of like the schematics of the teams that they have to play still are very challenging to the troubles that they've had this year. So very important to see how they respond to this. I agree with you. I don't think they're done yet in terms of, you know, potential playoffs. They still have everything in front of them, but definitely a little cause for concern if you're a Bama fan, because this is not, it just seems kind of bizarro world, I guess, if you're an Alabama fan. Now, the flip side of the coin here, and one thing I do want to bring up with Tennessee is, first of all, absolutely the highest of praise. I mean, that was you said it best, Greg. The composure, the consistency throughout that game. They responded. They took the punches. And there was about 5 different opportunities there where Tennessee of old, or any other SEC team, Texas A&M, would have folded in the past, and they just didn't this time. So respect the hell out of them for that. But, and this is, I guess, my next question to you, Greg. Tennessee's getting a lot of hype, and rightfully so, right? I mean, they beat Bama. This was a great game, okay? But do you worry at all about Tennessee's legitimacy as a true national contender given the state of their defense, because I do. I worry about their defense in regards to playing complementary football.
Yeah, I think that game against Georgia is going to be very telling on where they're at as a national contender. You know, Georgia's not going to be able to win in a shootout against Tennessee. That's just not going to happen. But, I mean, we all know how good Georgia's defense is. And if they're able to move the ball against Georgia and, you know, look pretty comfortable against that defense, I mean, geez, like their offense is, you know, a generational offense, to be honest. You know, to put up 52 against Bama, if they're able to beat Georgia convincingly as well. But, I mean, you're right. We're going to have to see, too, how they're able to play, you know, between the trenches against Georgia. Very physical football team. They're gonna punch you in the mouth. That game will be very telling, you know, for that. It's hard to say at this point of the season, you know, who you have in the Natty. You know, it doesn't matter who wins, like who are the two teams going to be. You know, they're certainly a contender, and they haven't done anything really to prove otherwise at this point of the season. I mean, even looking before these games, you know, they've taken care of business every week. They've looked like one of the best teams in college football, especially one of the most explosive offenses. And, you know, teams have made it to the playoffs with explosive offenses and without good defenses. Look at Oklahoma. Almost every year they made the playoffs. That was their archetype. So, you know, just because their defense isn't up to par, if they can, you know, take care of business, if they can, especially against somebody, even like a team like Kentucky, if they're able to beat that team convincingly at the end of the year, you know, I think they're a legit contender.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was a lot of cries for them to be number one in the rankings this week. I think there's a little bit of merit to that. Like, if you really want to go off, you know, who right now is, they definitely have the best quality win of the season. And, you know, their offense is as explosive as anybody's in the country. So I wouldn't have been that surprised, and I don't think I would have been slighted at all if they had been number one given that after that win. But yeah, I am concerned a little bit about that defense, because that defense right now, like, you think about who they have on their schedule, right? Kentucky is a prime example and who I'm going to bring up in this situation, right? Kentucky is a team that their offense is, like, decent. It's not a great offense, but they can move the ball, right? That's the kind of game where, and then they have a really good defense. Kentucky has a really good defense. Like, they just held Mississippi State to 17 points. They're a really good defense when they have all their guys healthy. So that's a game to me that, you know, I don't want to say it's a trap game or anything, but Tennessee has Kentucky at home. And that's a game where you keep Kentucky in that game with having a bad defense like Tennessee does, and anything could happen, right? Anything could happen, especially if their defense can get some key stops. So you just, that's kind of always the worry with a team. And you, again, you saw it last year with Ohio State. Great offense. Iffy defense. You know, there's a couple of times where sometimes you have to play catch up and forces you to do things you normally wouldn't, and it could cost you a game. So definitely just, you know, high praise for Tennessee. But I think if you're a Volunteers fan, you definitely want to be a little cautious of that defense as you start getting into those bigger games, because it might cost you. Like, it almost cost them this game because Bama came back. So I don't know, but best win of the week for sure, best win of the season. So props to them. We'll see how the rest of the SEC plays out. But yeah, that's that game. The next game I want to bring up is another top 10 matchup, Michigan, Penn State. Okay, we have been talking, and me in particular, had been talking for the majority of the season about how I believed that Michigan was like the biggest question mark that remained in college football. And we talked this past week that this was going to be the game to kind of air that out. And boy, oh boy, did it. And not in the way that we really thought it would. But I do want to bring up one thing, Greg, and then I'm going to get your thoughts on this game. I think right now, and this again, this could be bias speaking here, Michigan has one of the best running offenses in the country. But what I saw and what not a lot of people are talking about here in that game is that J.J. McCarthy against a good defense was strictly mediocre. So I think the recipe here against the Wolverines, if you're the rest of the Big Ten, is if you can stop that run, right? And I'm mainly looking at Illinois here. If you can stop that run and force J.J. to have to pass into, you know, maybe a 7-deep coverage, 8-deep coverage, I don't know. There could be some issues there. He was good, but no touchdowns, under 200 yards, and a pick. I mean, that's not going to cut it against, like, an Ohio State. So that's my one takeaway. But absolutely epic performance from the run
like,
game.
Going into the game, you know, I'm kind of saying the same things that I'm saying now, you know, but if anything, I mean, I think it just emphasizes how overpowered their run game is, that a top 15 run defense, you know, couldn't do anything. It seemed like every play, you know, the line was driving Penn State back several yards. Blake Corum could rush for four before even getting touched. And, I mean, we saw that entire game. So it's not just the O-line and it's not just Blake Corum. It's both of them being incredibly good. So, I mean, you can sell out against the run, but, I mean, it didn't matter. Penn State knew that Michigan was going to run the ball, and it just didn't matter. And J.J. McCarthy didn't even need to make plays for them to win the game. And, you know, even at the end of the first half, it was 16-14, but it was kind of fluky. You know, Clifford throws that pick – or not Clifford. McCarthy throws that pick six. It bounces off – you know, it gets tipped. It bounces off dude's shoulder, and Curtis Jacobs is wide open to run it back. And all of a sudden, they're up, even though they've been dominating. And then Penn State they just couldn't get anything going on offense. And I thought, you know, my thinking when I said Penn State was going to win the game, I thought Sean Clifford would not show out, but I thought he would make veteran plays, he would make the mistakes, and McCarthy would be the one making the critical mistakes. And that just wasn't the case at all. So, like, looking ahead, you know, right after Thanksgiving, you know, the game Ohio State Michigan. Right now I don't know if I can pick one team or the other to win. And we got plenty of time before the game, you know, get more tape on these guys. But honestly, the biggest difference is Ohio State having a better defense this year. You know, are they able to, is it truly because they have a better defense, or is it because they're not playing teams like Michigan? That's going to be a quick, big question mark. And number two, on the flip side, Michigan losing a lot of their pieces on defense, but are they still going to dominate the trenches against Ohio State like they dominated the trenches against Penn State? You know, Morris looks really good. Mazi Smith at D tackle. I mean, even though they lost Hutchinson and Ojabo and Daxel, they still look dominant and have looked really solid all season. So I'm not ready, you know, I'm not ready to call them the Big Ten champion. I'm certainly not. I think we have more to see from both of these teams, because that was Michigan's first test. They haven't played a lot of good teams, and we don't even know if Penn State's, you know, a 10-win caliber team. Same with Ohio State. They've played well, you know, but Ryan Day said after this week, we haven't achieved any of our goals yet. They've taken care of business. They've looked really good. But, you know, the bulk of their schedule is coming up now. And, you know, we'll see how the Buckeyes respond. But I think, if anything, this game shows that Michigan belongs in the playoff picture for sure. It wasn't just a one-year thing. And There is a path to two Big Ten teams in the playoffs. I don't know how likely it is, but I think it's at least in the realm of possibilities.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. And I guess, too, to make a comment, we're going to get a lot of comparison, I guess, already between Ohio State and Michigan in a few weeks, because Ohio State's going to go on the road and play Penn State. So there's going to be that whole, you know, well, they played the same team and the score was this versus that. And even though that necessarily isn't how it works, that's still going to be part of the conversation. But boy, oh boy, isn't this just yet another example and just so indicative of both Clifford's time and Franklin's time at Penn State so far? I mean, how many times have we seen Penn State come into a game like this with a ranking like that and then throw up something like this? It's just, you know, I don't know if you're Penn State, like, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe a quarterback change in the second half of the year after they lose to Ohio State, or if they lose to Ohio State, or if they lose, you know, three other games. Like, is there a certain point where you're just like, okay, we need to move forward? I don't know. And I don't know where they go from here. It's going to be very interesting to see how they play against Ohio State, because that's going to be a home game for them. It's going to be a big test as well for Ohio State. And so it's just going to be an opportunity again for Penn State to maybe regain some of that luster. But right now, it's a lot of deja vu for Nittany Lions fans, I would say.
One more thing real quick.
And just kind of unfortunately.
If Ohio State,
so,
you know, strolls into Beaver Stadium and it's like CJ throwing for six touchdowns and they win like 45-21. I think this, you know, Michigan-Ohio State game is going to be absolute behemoth. You know, if Penn State can't handle Ohio State's passing offense, you know, just like they couldn't handle Michigan's rushing offense, I mean, you probably have two of the most dominant units in college football there, and they're going to match up at the end of the year, hopefully 11-0 each.
Yeah, that definitely has potential there to be a great one. All right, so we have four more games that
those
I kind of wanted
ones
to touch on here. We'll start to, you know, maybe rapid fire them a little bit. But the next one I want, yeah, those are the big two. Those are the top 10 matchups. The next one I wanted to discuss, though, with you, and was just absolutely electric. I don't know if you watched this game at all, Greg, but it was USC Utah. And, you know, we had been talking about USC and their defense, and I've been quite vocal about my disdain for Lincoln Riley's defenses throughout his career. And this is a game right here where that reared its head, right? Like, you cannot score 42 points and lose a game and expect to be in the playoff picture, unless you're Alabama and you're playing a team like Tennessee. Like, Utah is not, like, their offense is good, but their offense is not that level. It is not dominant level. So that's just kind of sad, and I don't really know what where to go here. Like, USC now, all of a sudden, the Pac-12 is now wide open. Like, this game this weekend between UCLA and Oregon is going to be a behemoth, and after that,
I was
going
to say
the Pac-12 could play itself out of contention this weekend.
I was gonna ask,
or
you,
it
you
could
think,
just like blow itself wide open. Like,
game,
you just
when
don't
it
know.
Occurs, do you think there'll be playoff ramifications then, or do you think it'll just be like two lost teams facing off for a spot in the Rose Bowl?
Well, it's gonna be tough, right? Because so Utah and UCLA have already played. Utah's already played USC and UCLA. They haven't played Oregon yet. Okay. USC has played Utah.
They haven't played UCLA.
I think they have Oregon
year
on their schedule, right?
Yep.
No, they don't. But they haven't played UCLA. Yeah, they haven't played UCLA, and that game is at UCLA. And then they also have a game that doesn't have any implications as far as the Pac-12 is concerned, but it would have implications for a potential USC playoff bid and that's the last game of the season with Notre Dame. So they still have two big time games that they have to worry about. So I guess my point is here is like, it's so hard to tell because the way that these teams have been beating up on each other, like this to me is like speaking very similarly as like typically what we see in the Big 12, where like they just start kind of like beating on each other. And like, there's four teams that are really good, but they all go like 1-1 or 2-1 against each other. And so everybody ends up with like two losses and they just play themselves out of the playoff. I think the only way that the Pac-12 saves itself from that scenario occurring is if UCLA beats Oregon this weekend. Because if UCLA beats Oregon, then that gives the Pac-12 a bona fide, like, undefeated team heading into the second half of the year. And it also gives them a clear path forward in terms of USC and UCLA. That's going to decide who makes it into the playoff. And it kind of takes a little bit of pressure off of that Utah-Oregon game. But I honestly, I don't know. Because the other aspect here that complicates things is Oregon's loss was a non-conference loss. So they're undefeated in the Pac-12. So like that also can have ramifications too. They could be a two-loss team with only one loss in the Pac-12 and make it in the championship and then win. And then what are you going to do there? So I guess my short answer is like I have no clue. I think and I hope that it does have playoff ramifications. And I hope that it does because that means UCLA wins out. I'd love to see them like have a nice miracle story to fight into the playoff this year. I just don't know, though. I guess, Greg, to give you like to firmly stand on one line, I think we see a Big 12 scenario here where they just start to beat up on each other. Like, I think UCLA potentially could beat Oregon this weekend. But then I think Utah is going to beat Oregon. And I think UCLA is going to... Or USC is going to beat UCLA. So, like, you're going to have, like, exactly what I'm telling you is going to happen. I don't know. I don't know. You know. I don't think so, though.
Great comparison with the Big 12. That's kind of how I see it. Even if UCLA beats Oregon this week, I just don't see this team running the table. And even if it's an upset, like, how many times has Oklahoma got upset by, like, an Iowa State team or, you know, somebody that really shouldn't be beating them, especially if they're a playoff contender, and it just happens. Even though they take care of business in the big games, I don't know. They've been winning games. They've been playing really well, but they haven't been blowing teams out. It's not like they beat Utah by 30 points. If they beat Utah by 30, whole different story. But I think they're at a similar skill level, you know, as the other alphas in the conference. And I don't think there's one alpha in the conference. I think it's, like you said, it's very, very balanced near the top. There's a hierarchy. And, you know, that top tier of teams isn't, you know, pretty indistinguishable from each other. And that's kind of going to prevent, you know, playoff teams from this conference, at least talking about this year. But, you know, talking about the Utah-USC game, you know, great, great win for Utah. You know, they're a team that I've been cheering for, and they're an easy team to cheer for, you know, underdog status. They don't have the recruiting classes that these other schools do. But, man, what a gutsy win. I mean, going for two, running the ball on fourth down. I mean, fighting back, you know, in the fourth quarter. Yeah, I mean,
that's what I was gonna say. Do you rate going for two there to win the game?
Goal, you have the momentum.
I mean, you got it right. You come back like that at home.
I think it was just one of those things where almost every sort of factor of momentum is pointing in your favor, and you don't want to give the more talented team, you know, a chance to win in overtime. You know, you don't want to prolong it. So I kind of do agree with that decision. And, you know, for Cam Rising, I read something that he has a personal vendetta against Lincoln Riley. Something with his recruiting at Oklahoma must have lied to him or misled him or something of that sort. So he is not a fan of Lincoln Riley. So I'm sure he wanted to do everything in his power, you know, to convert that 2-point conversion, and that's exactly what happened. And especially, you know, honoring the two players that unfortunately passed away. I mean, that's just a massive win for a team that is out of the playoff picture, but you know, they still could scrounge together 9-10 wins, make it to a good bowl game, and it'll be a great season for them.
Yeah, and they're exactly like you think about them, you think about Kentucky, you think about Mississippi State, right? Like, these are two lost teams that, you know, at least up until this point, we haven't seen a two lost team in the playoffs. So we write these guys off as soon as they get two losses. But these guys are, these are quality teams, right? And so these are, you know, as we get towards the end of the year, more and more of these teams are going to creep up where, like, yeah, they're done, but they're playing spoiler. And like a Utah is a perfect example of like a team where, you know, they manhandled Oregon twice last year. That team is, Utah is physical. Like, they're the type of team where they will beat you up and bruise you, and you may be way better than them, but they'll just beat you because they just hurt you. Like, they just break you down. And so, like, you know, that's the type of game where, you know, Utah could play itself into the Pac-12 championship because one of their losses was, again, non-conference, and just kind of take their own conference out in their own pursuit of a championship. So it's just something interesting to keep in mind with the Pac-12 this year. And that's, again, why we kind of talked about that Big 12 example. Just very, very interesting. It's definitely, I think, you know, up there as personally, I think one of the most exciting big championship races, I'd say, of the Power Five. Like, this is a weird year though, because like when you think about it, I guess this is a slight tangent point here, Greg, but this is a weird year because at this point in time, you can literally say every single Power Five conference championship is still up in the air. Like, every single one. You can at least point to, in the Big Ten, there's three teams that come to mind, right? Illinois, Michigan, Ohio State. In the Big 12, you've got Oklahoma State still in the running, TCU, Kansas State, right? In the SEC, you've got Ole Miss, you've got Tennessee, you've got Bama, you've got Georgia. Pac-12, those four teams we just talked about. And then in the ACC, you've got Syracuse and Clemson, and then you have a really good NC State team, again, who's 1-2 in the ACC, 5-2 overall, but spoiler, they could play spoiler. So just, and a UNC team also that's in the mix.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just wild to me that everything is still up in the air.
Yeah.
And Texas, and I mean, I forgot about Texas in the Big 12.
There's plenty of season left to play.
They're running in the conference,
you
as
know,
well.
Teams that look like even playoff contenders could fall off quickly. You know, you have an injury, you have a bad performance, you know, you lay an egg at home, that changes the outlook on things for the rest of the year. So, I mean, that's what makes college football so great. You know, teams that we were talking about a few weeks ago as playoff contenders, teams that we weren't talking about as playoff contenders, you know, the roles have reversed for them. So, I mean, plenty of football left. Not much more you could say.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to blow through kind of like my thoughts on the rest of the week, Greg, and then I'll let you wrap up your thoughts. But so real quick, I want to shout out TCU, Max Duggan. That was a great comeback win there. That's a stinging loss for Oklahoma State, especially because now this game with Texas is super important for them if they want to continue to be in that fight for the Big 12. But great win for TCU. TCU looks like the real deal. We're going to see this weekend again. They play Kansas State. They just keep lining up big games for themselves, it seemed like. So great win for that program. Great to see them, you know, continuing to build that resume, given the history of TCU and the college football playoff and how they kind of got slighted in year one. Or they felt like they did. So it would be cool to see them kind of go on a run and win the Big 12. Next thing I want to talk about is Syracuse. Syracuse looks like the real deal as well. We'll see how they play against Clemson. NC State was battered and bruised without Devin Leary, and it showed how truly important he is for that team. But Syracuse, all credit due for that team. Their defense looks legit as well. We'll see how they hold up against Clemson, though. Then next thought here is Kentucky. Okay. Listen, my Wildcats, they were down. Like, this was the first time this entire year, Greg, the first time the entire year I picked against Kentucky in our picks. And it was the only game this entire weekend I was happy to be wrong about. They looked very much back to what we come to expect from them in the start of the year, which was that toughness, that grit. Will Levis was slinging it no matter what happened to him back there. Their defense played well. So big win for the Cats. They continue to be in the mix as a spoiler in the SEC. They still have Georgia and Tennessee on their schedule. So we'll see how they do against those teams. And then the last two teams I want to touch on real quick. Not going to really say much about Texas, but way to hold that out. That's a big win. That's a win that Texas teams of old don't win. So they keep themselves firmly in the race there and in the conversation against an Iowa State team that 0-4 in the Big 12 is not something that we saw coming at the beginning of the year for Matt Campbell and his boys. And then the last team on my lightning round here is Illinois. Illinois firmly placing themselves in pole position here in the Big Ten West, looking very much the part, shutting down an explosive Minnesota offense with a great defense, and then showing you that they have balance and talent on offense with both Chase Brown and Garrett Schrader. They look like they're all ready to give Michigan and anybody else in the Big Ten a little bit of help in a few weeks.
You kind of covered
so
a
very
lot
excited
of the
to see how
there.
That program continues to
like
grow
to highlight
this
in the
year.
ACC race. UNC advances to 6-1. Kind of forgot about them a little bit these past few weeks. You know, they drop a game to Notre Dame earlier this year. But, I mean, they've played good football. They're still a very solid team, and nobody's really talking about them anymore, especially with, you know, some of the other ACC teams with a lot of interest, one of them being Syracuse. I put a good amount of money on Syracuse to win, you know, to cover the spread, and they fired on all cylinders against NC State. I don't see this team, you know, running the table or anything, but, you know, they can certainly be in the mix for a New Year's Six Bowl. You know, that's not out of the realm of possibility. And see how they play against Clemson this week, because that's going to be, you know, obviously the biggest test of the season. Even if they don't win, it's about how they play against, you know, blue blood program at this stage of college football. So, you know, if they get blown out by Clemson, that could be one of those situations where an upstart team, kind of the wheels fall off the wagon and, you know, might drop some games as well, you know, now that they're not undefeated anymore. Speaking of Clemson, another big win for them against Florida State. One could say that's a trap game on the road, you know, at night against a team that wanted to regain their luster. You know, the crowd was electric. They held on there. What else? I guess that's all I had for the ACC. Couple other points, you know, Illinois, a tough win against Minnesota. Minnesota loses Tanner Morgan. That's a pretty bad loss for them. You know, their sixth year starting QB, you really hate to see that happen. And wheels are starting to fall off the wagon a little bit for Minnesota, especially if I'm not sure what his status is, to be honest with you. But if he's out for any extended period of time, you know, that's a very significant loss for their offense. And then, you know, looking at a team that I was very confident in, Oregon State advances to 5-2, you know, take care of business against Wazoo. Maybe they can play spoiler. I remember one year they upset USC in a big matchup. Who knows? Maybe that happens again. I don't even know if they play each other. I was just throwing that out there. LSU takes care of business in the swamp. Not everyone had LSU winning that game after the performance they had against Tennessee. So that's a big time bounce back W for Brian Kelly. And then Maryland gets their fifth win of the season as well against Indiana. They're not a slouch either. I actually kind of think that if Ohio State can't fix their issues in the secondary, Maryland could keep this game close against them. And that'll be one to watch, especially since that's coming the week before Michigan. So Ohio State's going to have, you know, going to be looking forward to that game. If they, you know, if they get caught sleepwalking, you just got to be careful of those types of games if you're Ohio State. But yeah, all in all, you know, every week the playoff picture is starting to get a little bit more clear, and, you know, still have no idea. We have some sort of idea who some of the front runners are, but like we've said, no team looks, you know, invincible. Every team has at least one semi-big weakness, you know, even the Ohio States and Georgias and Michigans, you know, teams that have played well all season. We're not seeing like a Joe Burrow LSU season from anyone. And there's a lot of sleeper teams that have came to play this year. But, you know, looking forward to watching the rest of the season. We got another great week coming up. That's about all I have.
Yep, so there you have it. Couldn't have summed it up better, folks. Thanks again for listening to another episode of Slightly Offsides presented by Better Edge. We've got a great slate coming up for week 8, and we're going to cover that in our picks and predictions episode next. So we will catch you on that episode, and we will catch you on social media. Until then, and until next time, peace from Slightly Offsides.
Thanks for listening to Slightly Offsides. We'll catch you next time.